And I never thought I'd go to an all-girls school. I never thought I'd go to Catholic school, but it was the best thing ever. It's a really fun place. But I think that's definitely based in my context of having gone to a typical American school. And I think that if you've never gone to an American public school, that the one thing I can compare it to is every single movie that you've seen in an American high school is actually true. All those things happen. And so going to a really small all-girls school is amazing because everyone's super nice. You get a lot of attention because there's only like 30 girls in your grade and a lot of teachers. And it's just a really close-knit community where you don't feel as judged for every move as you would in kind of that co-ed, really hierarchical public school system where it's really based on popularity and stuff. And so it was a really welcoming environment to be.
Welcome to Tokyo Alumni Podcast. This is episode 69. Today, our guests live in the UK for her childhood, where she attended Japanese school in London and also attended the American school in London. She then went to New Jersey, where she attended US public school, eventually finding her way to Japan, where she attended the International School of Sacred Heart, where she would graduate in 2018. She is currently a student at George Washington University and will be graduating next year with a bachelor's in political science. Influenced by her parents, who are from the US and Japan, she has always had a vested interest in international relations and politics. Experiencing the societal differences of both the US and Japan, she discovered a passion of hers in university, promoting the status and advocating for a professional woman, especially in Japan. Although only at the beginning of what she hopes is a fruitful journey, she has been working with fellow alumni to develop the first professional alumni network for all girls alma mater. In developing this network, she hopes to make pre-professional development part of her former high school's education, as well as bring in professional alumni together to exchange opportunities and advice for navigating the business world as a woman. Welcome to the podcast, Ellen.
Thank you so much for having me.
So today, I think our focus of conversation is quite specific. We talk quite a bit about this, woman in the professional workplace, as well as, being a recent graduate. I would like to hear a bit sort of your perspective on ISSH being an all-girls school, maybe how that connects to St. Mary's being an all-boys school, as well as, how you guys perceive the mixed schools like ASIJ, YS, and so on. So first of all, if you could just maybe tell us a bit about yourself in regards to what you're doing at the moment, right? You're a junior at George Washington. What are things like being a college student currently in times of COVID?
I personally love it, but that is a very unpopular opinion. Everybody else wants to be on campus, but I live in Boston currently just for this semester, and I'm taking classes remotely. And it gives me so much freedom to do like side internships and jobs that I've had going on since previous years or months. And I have a lot of time to do other things, and it's just great for managing other stuff that I want to do. So I've really enjoyed this online format, and I'm going to be sad to see it go. Still not sure what's going to happen next semester, but fingers crossed I'll get to finish out university online. But again, a very unpopular opinion. But yeah, that's what I'm up to right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you can leverage the situation in any way, it's always an advantage, right? And
Yeah, totally. And it's been great. I've been able to keep jobs that I've been doing in Tokyo up until now, and the time difference, of course, is really bad, but it's a lot easier to be doing classes here. So it's just everything has worked out great. And if possible, I really want to stay online. But I think it's definitely changing the way that we can. I know everyone says it's the way we can work, we can go to school, but that isn't without a huge compromise to our education. I definitely see myself less engaged in classes and learning a lot less. But at the same time, I don't know how much of what we learn in college we really take into our first job. It's more just having the degree that's the important thing. So I don't know. I think it works pretty well, but definitely an unpopular opinion.
So things are not too bad on your end. In regards to, your classmates, you're a junior right now, but I imagine you have many seniors who are graduating this spring, especially international school graduates. What is the job market looking like? Is it as bad as I hear it is?
I haven't heard of it being too bad. I think most people I'm surrounded with were able to secure some kind of work. I think early on from having an internship, probably in like the summer between their junior and senior year, that gave them a return offer. But I know that a lot of companies have been hesitant to take on the usual amount of new grads that they usually do. So they've been kind of cutting back, but I haven't heard it to be too bad. And I think a lot of people are realizing that they can still do well, their businesses can still do well, even though they're not being able to go into the office, and rather those things can have good cost-cutting effects on their business actually. So I haven't heard it to be too tough, but I am getting nervous about people in my position who are graduating kind of a year out from now, when we could feel more of the economic effects that are going to hit the people who have suffered most throughout COVID. So I don't know. I'm a little nervous about people a year out, like people my age.
That's a fair observation, to have that trepidation of kind of almost like a bottleneck, right? Where we know it's coming, that there's, you know, we're somehow, you know, getting through this right now as a society. But yeah, I agree that there will be definitely consequences sooner or later. But again, hopefully, as you've been able to ride this wave of COVID, could ride that whatever issues come in the future. You graduated ISSH. We actually haven't had many people from ISSH on this podcast very recently as well. So I wanted to ask you a few questions about, you know, the all-girls school, because I think that parlors very well into the conversations we'll have later on about, you know, creating an alumni network there. Going to ISSH, how did that compare to SESEN and St. Mary's? And how did you guys view other schools outside of that sort of trio, like ASIJ and YS?
So I was a latecomer to Sacred Heart. I was only there for my last 2 years of high school, but it's always been, so we never, my family and I never imagined we would move back to Japan, and we thought that we would be staying in the States forever, but my dad just got transferred, and it was a great experience. I loved Sacred Heart. I had been going to co-ed school for like 9 years, and I never thought I'd go to an all-girls school. I never thought I'd go to Catholic school, but it was the best thing ever. It's a really fun place. But I think that's definitely based in my context of having gone to a typical American school. And I think that if you've never gone to an American public school, that the one thing I can compare it to is every single movie that you've seen in an American high school is actually true. All those things happen. And so going to a really small all-girls school is amazing because everyone's super nice. You get a lot of attention because there's only like 30 girls in your grade and a lot of teachers. And it's just a really close-knit community where you don't feel as judged for every move as you would in kind of that co-ed, really hierarchical public school system, where it's really based on popularity and stuff. And so it was a really welcoming environment to be. I think the same can be said about SESEN. I really don't know much about it. St. Mary's, I think I know a little more about, but, and ASIJ I don't know too much about either, but I think that all the schools have like a great, great characteristics and really great communities to be in. So I think everyone who goes really and graduates from international school really enjoys their time there, as I'm sure you've heard from all your guests on the podcast. But when I was first about to move to Japan, I actually looked at all three schools, Sacred Heart, SESEN, and ASIJ. And I decided to go to Sacred Heart after spending a day at each school. So I actually had an experience that not a lot of people do, where I got to do a little tester of each international school. And that was extremely eye-opening. And in the end, Sacred Heart fit me the best. I thought the people were the most welcoming, and it was a really good choice of mine.
Yeah, that's really unique that you were able to sort of test drive each of the schools. And, you know, you mentioned, so this all-girl school experience was good. And a lot of the, you know, literature shows that there are certain advantages all-girl school have. So what would you say, like, more specifically in regards to sort of the opportunities that all-girl schools provided you that maybe you weren't able to get at a public school in New Jersey?
So I think public schools, for the most part in the U.S., they're super based on popularity from a super young age. So I remember being in fifth grade and the whole notion of popularity is placed on you. And it's based on like whether you're wearing the cool stuff, doing the cool sports, who you're friends with, even down to things like, I mean, it depends on where you live and kind of like the wealth in your town, but what kind of car you drive and like how big your house is. And those things coming into your brain at fifth grade, I think are pretty heavy to deal with. And they really leave you maybe valuing the wrong things or thinking that friendship should be based on those statusy type things. But I think when you go to a school that's all girls and in the middle of Tokyo, you really don't see those parts of each other's lives. You don't really go to each other's houses as much. No one really drives a car to school. Everyone takes a train and everyone wears a uniform. So there's this great equalizing factor that I never experienced before that I think is really powerful for not letting anybody be above anyone else. And I think we were far enough physically and mentally from the boys' school that no one was competing in terms of like, oh, who has the most guy friends? Who has had the most boyfriends? There's really none of that at all. And I know that there's a lot of movies and media that depict girls' schools as total catfight places that are even worse for popularity, but that so wasn't the case at all. And one thing that I think is the most stark is in my public school, there is certain activities that are like unpopular and weird. And so these are things like being involved in drama and being in school clubs and being in like the school choir. And then when you get to Sacred Heart, I had a friend say to me that, oh, she's in a play. And I looked at her like she was crazy. And everyone was like, why? And I was like, well, like you can't be in the play. And everyone's like, no, everyone doesn't. It's so fun. And then we all go watch and we all like clap for them at the end and get them flowers. And I was like, well, that's the best example of people just being supportive for each other. And that's definitely the whole theme of Sacred Heart, is just being supportive of each other in whatever you're doing, in any activity, any setting. And I think that's a really powerful thing to have for girls.
That's a great point about the equalizer. I've always thought very similar, actually, with the cars. It actually, you know, puts the fear of God in me. If you imagine the kids at the Inta in Tokyo, if they were able to drive at 16, 17, 18, oof, and we had parking lots, that would just be insanity, right? You'd have cars, you'd have Bentleys and, you know, whatnot. So yeah, I do agree that even, and beyond that, just as a culture, I do also agree with you that there is less of a culture to sort of really flex your wealth. In fact, I mean, to this day, there's classmates I have who I don't know what their parents would do. Or I find out in my 30s that, you know, this kid turns out to be the heir of like some real great fortune and no one knew. And so yeah, that's definitely a unique thing. But I feel like that's more for international schools in general. When it comes to like all girls schools, at least some of the literature that I've read is when it comes to leadership positions, there tends to still be, you know, mixed gender schools, boys take the higher positions and then girls take the lower ones. So do you feel like in that sort of, I guess, context that all girls schools help?
Definitely. And I was part of debate in high school, and one of our debate topics is what is better, a single sex school or a co-ed school. And I've also read probably similar literature that has said things like all girls schools benefit girls a lot, but all boys schools don't really benefit boys as much.
Yeah, and that's what I read too.
Not girls.
Yeah.
I was like, so half of us are going to have to sacrifice going to a co-ed school then, I guess. And half of us will get to be with all the girls. But, yeah, I think it's really powerful to see everybody in leadership positions be a girl, because that's all you have at your school. So that's really fun. You almost forget that guys exist when you're in this little world. And I don't ever want to say that I felt held back by the boys that I had gone to school with, but it is very liberating to live in a world where you know that you're not having to worry about any factors that boys really bring into the picture, especially when you're in high school. And I think in public school, in co-ed school, I think it was generally unpopular to be in leadership positions, and therefore none of like the popular guys did it. But if you were a girl who wanted to do it, you definitely didn't want to be seen as that girl who had like super strong opinions, that was going to be such like, people always say like a ball buster all the time. And so, yeah, you definitely didn't want to be seen in that way. And I think that can be really detrimental to what you as a girl think what leadership is and how you view your own like leadership style and what becomes connected with the meaning of leadership, because suddenly it turns negative. Whereas seeing everybody run for these positions in Sacred Heart is extremely positive. And it just shows you that it just giving you that prior experience of having done that before suddenly gave me a lot of confidence in college to go into a student organization and also run for leadership there. So there, I think there's a really good translation that needs to be made in high school in order for future success in college and in the future.
Well, and you mentioned college, you know, you do then go to mixed gender. There's not many schools that are all girls at Wesleyan and Vassar is maybe all girls.
I think there's one like Pomona. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's not many. So you do now go to mixed gender schools. So I guess a common question people would have then is, what was that transition like going from all girls high school to mixed gender college?
So my university is actually very female dominated. but not extremely noticeably. It wasn't too weird, but it was sad. I think it was sad mainly not for the gendered aspect, but I think when a lot of people leave international school, they just lose a lot of the community that you had. And college does not have the same community. It is not close knit. You're with like tens of thousands of other people. And of course you can make your own community, but it is really cool knowing the entire school. And that's what you get to have in international school. And that's why I totally had a Sacred Heart. And you definitely do start to factor men or guys and more. And I think a lot of girls from Sacred Heart probably leave and they start dating people at university. And I think that kind of male factor might come in a little more. And I think that can make it difficult for people. But I think at the same time, we get the benefit of growing up a lot at that age. We're all 18 and we're all like getting closer and closer to like full adulthood. That I think those things, it almost evens out because you start caring less, but you're also in the presence of the other gender. And so I think it balances more than it would during high school, but it's definitely the right time to transition because it's got to happen at some point. So,
and you graduated quite recently, right? 3 years ago. And you're sort of in the process of making this alumni network. So what is the status quo actually right now of ISSH and the alumni network? And what is, you know, the project that you're working on currently?
So yeah, I'm going to take you back into the beginning, just the conception of all of this. So I might get a little long, but this basically started with a few classmates of mine. And this friend of mine who I started it with, we've always talked since I've met her my junior year, just about, we were on debate together. So we always talked about those types of topics like gender in the workplace, what we're going to do in the future. And we'd always bounce ideas off each other. Like, oh, we heard this really sexist comment. We read this really like crazy thing. Like, how do you feel about that? What does that mean to you? And she's a really good person to debate with and talk about these things. And we were introduced to the St. Mary's Network, actually, is where it all started. And they have, I'm sure you've heard about it and talked to people from there. They have an extremely robust network, which they are very proud of, as they should be, because it is actually incredible what they've built, and they've taken a lot of time to build that. And so we saw that, and we were kindly invited by them tons of times to join their events and talk to their alumni in various industries. But we kept waiting to hear from our alumni network and be invited to those types of events and hear about female professionals. And it just never came. And then we were invited into the network, but it's not really the kind of network that 18 to 25 year old recent graduates want to be in. It's a kind of social network that exists on Facebook, that maybe fundraises occasionally for the school, that does Zoom talks, but Zoom like reunions, but most of those Zoom reunions are like with the class of 1985. And you know, we're the class of 2018. And there's just such a huge gap there, just like generationally, of mindset. And we as 21 year olds are in such a different mindset than someone in their 50s. And so the disconnect was huge. And honestly, we felt kind of gypped. We were like, where are our female leaders? Because we know they exist. And when you dig a little, and I'm honestly just scratching the surface here, you find amazing ish grads that soon become your mentors. And I'm super thankful for them because they totally exist. They do really cool jobs. They're super strong, super knowledgeable, and they want to be part of a network too. And so this is basically where we started. And I hear this a lot about entrepreneurs and stuff. Not that I don't really have an entrepreneurial bone. But people say that the best ideas come from like an experience where there is an absence of what they're looking for, right? And so I think that's exactly what happened with us. And we were looking for something, and for a long time, we were waiting it to come to our hands. But then we got to a point where it's like, I think we have to be the ones that do this then, because no one else has it. It just doesn't exist. And if we don't do it, then five grades below us is never going to have it either, and keep continuing that. And what does that do to the amount of females that come out of ISH going into the Japanese job market? Like, it's only doing us a disadvantage, and it's only doing a disadvantage to the strength of women in business in Japan. So it's really got to be something that we started. So yeah, we started that. It was really like a 2.5 years until we finally launched off the ground. And we decided to do that through a LinkedIn platform, because the current alumni network, the more social side of it, exists on Facebook. So we thought a good way to differentiate that is to go on a platform that is solely professionally based. And so we exist on there, and we are a closed group that just has members from Sacred Heart, added by people of different classes. So our kind of methodology to go about that was to identify two point people per grade, going back maybe like 15 years from our graduation. And we identified two people that one of us, well, my partner, because I wasn't involved in that, but my co-founder, I wasn't Sacred Heart at that time, but my co-founder knew from all those years ago, and she contacted them and asked them to add everybody in their grade onto that LinkedIn page. And everybody did a really good job helping us with that. And so we've slowly been able to grow our membership that way. Mm-hmm. And the whole goal of the page is not necessarily to be like St. Mary's, where we host events and we like facilitate making those connections through those events. But we want to be more of like an encyclopedia, where you go on this LinkedIn page and you look at our members list. And let's say you're a senior headed off to university. You look at the members page and you go, okay, I'm looking for an alumni that graduated from my university, because I want to talk about what they did. And so you just type in that university, and up comes all these alumni who have attended there. And so you go down and you can chat one of them, and you get to have that buffer there that says you've both graduated from the same high school. It's not awkward to start a conversation, right? It's not cold calling somebody and saying, can you please come get coffee with me for half an hour? You know, there's already that buffer there where we know each other. We're comfortable talking to each other. It's not a complete stranger. And that, we think, really helps facilitate conversations and makes the alumni, the older alumni, more willing to spend time with the younger alumni. And that's not just for universities. That's also for an industry, a certain company that someone's interested in. And I think that really benefits the like 18 to 25 age range there.
Yeah, so that's a really good idea. I was wondering if you would be interested in doing that for ACIJ.
So what's ACIJ's network like? Is it...
It's not quite like St. Mary's. What does set ACIJ apart, I think, in a good way, although I think they probably should have done this earlier, is they actually have people on payroll to be purely in charge of alumni networking. So, you know, it's a boon and a bane. I think on one hand, you know, I commend the school's forward thinking, because I think not all schools have people on payroll. But when it comes to sort of the fruition of, you know, the final product, I like what you were saying, that's what I would like to, and, you know, that's what I would like to see. I know there's kind of encyclopedia-ish type of thing they have, but I guess that's where maybe things like privacy and information, they just, you know, they like to hold their cards, I guess, close to them, you know,
yeah,
as opposed to keeping it transparent. So yeah, I think it relates to what you were saying, like, I think alumni want to help other alumni, right? It's just such a basic concept. And sometimes these schools, I think, don't realize, just let the people talk to each other. And I think that's what you guys are heading towards. Very exciting. Who's the person you started this with?
Yeah, so she's a really close friend of mine. Her name's Kaya Hirota. She's currently a University of Toronto student, also a junior, and she's a ish veteran. So that really helped, because I was very new. And sometimes you have a bit of this like imposter syndrome if you're very new, because I mean, I only lived in Japan as like a 1-year-old. And then I came back when I was 15. So it had been a long time. And there's part of you that feels like, okay, I've been here for a year. I have friends. I feel very Sacred Hearty. But at the same time, I don't know people from 5 years ago who graduated. So who's going to really take me seriously? And do I even have like the, am I even allowed to benefit from a network of a place that I only spent 2 years at? Like, what did I really contribute here? And so it was very nice having a veteran, because I felt a little more like, okay, I'm working with someone who is very through and through Sacred Heart. And she really knows this place. So she's been a great asset to have.
Interest in, you know, women in the workplace. And I'm seeing the connections now a lot with, you know, your passion towards ISSH as a school, and, you know, towards education for girls. How does this connect then to the alumni network?
Yeah, so my passions always, I don't think I've been able to put them into words until maybe starting this project, but I've always felt it's one of those issues that kind of makes your blood boil. And I think everyone has a few of them. And especially being, I've always wanted to be a political science major. And since I was in like eighth grade, so I've always had a little bit of that like Gen Z social justice warrior side that a lot of things make my blood boil relating to social justice and stuff. But I think women in particular was a big one. And I think in relation to the network, it's really about becoming, I think it's twofold. So one of them is on more of like a community basis for Sacred Heart. I just think in my conversations with people in from like 25 to 35 professional alumni, what I've seen is they also have questions about how to be a woman in the workforce, how to navigate that better, how to start a family, but also continue working. And there's so many questions, so many things that they were rhetorically posing to me because I don't know the answer either. I'm not at that stage in life. But they were also saying to me, it's good you're thinking about this now because no one told me to think about this when I was 20. And so I'm thinking, okay, then I have to tell somebody else for because they're going to be 22. And it's kind of wanting to just better prepare everyone and keep everyone in a closer knit circle of being able to support each other because it's not easy, especially in Japan, to be a professional woman. I think on that community basis, that's kind of my first goal, just to be there for each other. And that being that encyclopedia of looking somebody up who's maybe also in tech or also in finance and being like, how do they navigate this world as a woman? Because I need a mentor to look up to here. And so I think that community basis is the first step. But I think the grander goal for me also is seeing how successfully St. Mary's was able to provide their graduates with connections that resulted directly in full-time offers and internships. And those are super, super valuable to young graduates. And the direct translation of knowing somebody to getting a job is so important because without that connection, they wouldn't have gotten that job. And it literally happens through one or two St. Mary's connections. Someone says they know someone else. Okay, I'll connect you to them. And then boom, you have a job. And we need more of that. We don't have enough people getting internships. We don't have enough people getting full-time offers from their connections. We're scrappy and going through maybe the channels that everyone else goes through, but that doesn't really help. If you have a way to get a leg up, you have to use it. And so I think my grander goal is to make sure that we have more Sacred Heart alumni who are great thinkers, incredibly intelligent women, and bilingual for the most part, working in Japan. I think we have a huge asset here that we're not taking advantage of. And I think there's a really good way to implement that into the Japanese workforce. And I think it's a very desirable thing to have. So anytime anyone comes to me looking for an intern, I'm so happy to suggest to them that I have a huge network of girls looking to work as well. So I think the grander goal is just to make sure that we have a clearer path for our graduates to get into great internships and great jobs.
I think, yeah, you brought up a really great point that there's a vast, just a huge difference between simply knowing someone versus like actually getting a job. Like that, there's that surface level. And I don't mean to put ASIJ on blast, but I think that's what a lot of schools have, right? They have that surface level where, oh, this guy works for this company. He'll write you an email, you know, explaining stuff. Whereas, as you said, you know, we shouldn't overly praise St. Mary's. They're not my alumni, but like, you know, with St. Mary's, they follow through. And I used to, my perspective, to be honest, in my 20s was more along the lines that this was kind of rather, you know, it was a bit, it felt a bit like nepotism. But the older I get and I see these people, you know, from St. Mary's, YS, basically any, you know, your prominent international schools, and maybe part of it was nepotism, but a lot of these people are just smart, right? I think we forget just how high level international school graduates are. So like, I think it's also a testament of, do you really trust your school? Because if you really trust your school and you trust your alumni, that alone should be a foot in the door. Because you go, okay, you went through this, you know, AP or IB, whatever system. You didn't get kicked out of school. So you probably were not, you know, like, we don't know if you excelled, but you did okay. That alone should be a ticket. And I agree strongly with that point of just actually getting that job as opposed to just that superficial, oh, here's some Zoom call, you know, someone in their industry. it's just so, yeah, it's so superficial. Going back to the sexism in Japan, that's also, I think, a very interesting point. Do you feel like being especially mixed race, that you see these differences, you know, in regards to culture? Because obviously the U.S. has, you know, there's sexism there. There's sexism everywhere. But at least my anecdotal experience would be that it's much stronger in Japan. And would you say being mixed, you feel that it's stronger when you're in Japan, or is that just me?
So I've had more work experience in Japan than I have in the US. So, which I think is always a very interesting turn my life took that I wasn't expecting. I hopefully plan to return to Japan upon graduating, but the bulk of my internship experience has been in Japan. And I've worked mainly for companies that are internationally founded. So their founders are from the international school community. And that's been deliberate on my part because I want to work for those companies. But I would say that really doesn't give me a good base of understanding for what's it like in general Japanese society. And I think I don't even know the half of it, because I'm told day in, day out that I don't know the half of it. And I don't even want to know what it's like. And I've heard that it's a very, very bad way to work. But I think part of my naiveness that I honestly am glad to have, and I'll totally be open about, is that I have a young spirit in that way of wanting to go into that and combat it face on. And that, I think, especially in the first parts of my career, is desirable. I'm probably going to feel a very different way when I'm in my 30s, and I'm going to be very tired of it at that point. But I think for a while, I am kind of interested in seeing it face on and actually experiencing the worst of it, just so I can be up against it and fight it as hard as I can. So I think that's also a desire of mine. And I'm told that it's impossible to do that, and that it's not fun and not as glamorous as it sounds, but I don't know, there's definitely a desire to do that and experience the worst of it, just so I can feel like I really know what it is, because without really knowing it, I don't know how much I can help the problem. But I don't know how well I know the traditional sexism in a real Japanese office, but I can say that I actually did intern this past like summer during COVID at a company where I was their first female intern ever. And that was, I mean, it's a very, very male run company, and I actually still do some work for them now, and I really like working with them. But there definitely is a difference in how, I would say, how jokingly they talk to other male interns versus how like kind of uptight and professionally they speak to me, just out of fear for maybe offending me. And so I do think that difference exists. And but I am really interested in seeing it in a very like Japanese format, which most people aren't excited to see, but I don't know. I feel the urge to fight it in some way.
That's a great point, that I guess you have to experience it first to really be able to, you know, combat it and come up with resolutions. And yeah, again, just based on my anecdotal experience was, you know, just looking at statistics. So I worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers for a while. I'm going to use their name. I don't care. I quit over a decade ago. And I want to say, roughly speaking, so it's a not IPO'd company, right? So you just have partners at the top, as opposed to investors. And I want to say, of the 30 partners I worked with or were within, you know, my team, probably about 29 were men. And so we're talking about 97% men there. And then conversely, when you look at the receptionists, secretaries, I want to say about 95% were women. And this was in 2005. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's accounting. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't think women are any worse than men in accounting. So there's clearly something going on there. That's my experience. So it's very exciting to hear, you know, younger people going in to try to sort of, you know, change things up a bit, because change is needed.
But I think one area that we actually struggle with is exactly that if you look at St. Mary's, and well, St. Mary's does have in general more alumni than we do remain in Japan. St. Mary's average classes are like 80 students, and the bulk of them actually either stay in Japan or return back to Japan. Whereas my graduating class was 37 girls, and the max for Sacred Heart is 50 girls per grade. the majority don't return back to Japan. The majority stay abroad. And so it actually is harder to connect our alumni with graduates who want to come back to Japan. We just don't have the numbers that St. Mary's does, but St. Mary's also has more alumni who have started their own businesses, which is really key to hiring young interns, because most big companies won't hire interns fresh out of their freshman year of college. They'll only take them maybe after their junior year of college. But that experience you gain in your first 2 years is really helpful. And so for us, finding more female founders of their own businesses has been a real key goal to getting more young interns some work experience. But so far, I've really only met two business founders who are ISH alumni in Japan, compared to the massive wealth of St. Mary's business, like male business founders, and also executive level position holders. We just really don't, it's the same comparison. We really don't have the same. And that's really key to getting young interns in the door, I think.
That's interesting, the logistical challenges. I knew you guys were smaller in size, but yeah, now that you mentioned 37 grads and then not as many go back to Tokyo, that does definitely pose other challenges, which is why it's more important that you really get this encyclopedia, or whatever you want to call it, glossary of graduates on a list. I want to sort of finish off with, we talked about off air, we're going to go into something not sort of, we've been very focused, right, so far with girls in school, women in the workplace, the alumni network. You have a unique hobby of listening to podcasts a lot, which is very cool because this is a podcast right now. So how often do you listen to podcasts, and do you have anything you recommend?
So they're the first thing I listen to when I wake up in the morning. And for this morning's podcast, because I knew I was going to be speaking with you later, I was really listening to how they question and answer. And I was, because when you listen, you really aren't listening for their speaking cues and stuff, but it's much more interesting to really think about exactly how they answer, what words they do and don't use, and how it is a conversation in a podcast, but it's also really not, because you have to be a little more measured with those things. But anyways, as a political science major, I'm a huge consumer of news, and always have been. So the minute I wake up, I listen to, and as I get ready, I hate silence really, so I always have something in my ears. I listen to, up first is NPR's just like their morning news podcast, and that's out early in the morning at like 5 a.m. I do not wake up at that time, but it's good because it's like 15 minutes. And so up first, yeah, that's every day, Monday through Saturday, actually. They added a Saturday, which is great. And then after that, I listened to Politico Playbook, which I used to read, but the podcast version is a lot funnier, so I suggest that as well. Politico Playbook is just Politico's really deep dive into Washington specific news. So it's a lot of nitty gritty, what's happening on the Hill, what's happening in the White House, a lot more fun Washington gossip, a little less serious than NPR. And they make a lot of jokes. And then after that, for international news, I listen to the BBC's World Service. And that's half an hour. So that's like when I'm emptying my dishwasher in the morning. And then I take a break to do my schoolwork. And then I also will listen to one Wall Street Journal podcast. And then I'll also listen to Consider This at Night, which is NPR's second version of their morning podcast. So it's like they deep dive into one issue. And then because UK time is a little bit ahead of us, the second edition of the BBC World Service will be up by the time I'm going to bed. So I listen to that as well. I bookended again with that. So I get around like six or seven. Oh, and I listen to one Japanese podcast too.
Oh, which one is that?
It's they're NHK's podcast. So they do like these little 5 minute segments, five or 30 minute segments, like throughout the day, like every hour, where they just put out some news on like COVID, obviously. And so, yeah, I've got about six or seven going through the day. And I'm just religiously consuming news throughout the day. When I'm cooking, then I'll listen to Pod Save America. I think that one's really funny. Yeah. And then there's, I definitely, as people will hear, I'm consuming a lot of left-wing media. And so I put in a little Ben Shapiro sometimes to get like a very right side analysis of what's happening.
Interesting.
Only when I can handle it.
Wow, that's a lot of podcasts. I feel like that's the direction we're going in now, though, right? Everyone is just consuming more. And
it's great because usually I would have to sit down and read like all of these things. And now I can do all of this while emptying my dishwasher and vacuuming and like washing my face in the morning. It's really nice. And I think, a lot of people will say it's not nice. My grandparents would probably have a heart attack hearing how much I'm constantly listening to things, and they probably couldn't stand it. But I think it's a great way to just fit more things in your day. So I think it's very defining of the kind of generation that we are.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that too with the Gen Z and to a certain degree millennials. Do you feel like compared to the older generations, you need more, the younger generation needs more stimulation?
I would say yes. I think our attention spans are so much shorter, and I'm told that constantly by my parents as well. I don't mind it though. It's just who we are and what we've grown up with. So I'm okay with it. And I think we get a lot done and we're very snappy. But on the other side, so my dad's he's a big political science guy. He graduated from San Diego in political science as well. So we're always big debaters on these topics. He listens to podcasts, but he has to sit down with nothing in front of him and listen. Whereas I'm doing, like, I'm folding laundry, like I'm doing this and this, and I'm also listening. So to me, just sitting down is a waste of time if I can be doing something else. So I think that's definitely the busy bee mindset that a lot of us have that is very specific to us in our generation, as opposed to them. And they're more one thing at a time mindset. Yeah,
I agree with you. It's a double-edged sword, right? On one hand, we are faster though, especially, you know, I'm 34. So I got younger people, older people I work with. And with younger people, it is generally faster. I message them something, user response comes, you know, right away. It could be work ethic too, but sometimes, and obviously it's not all old and not all young people, but sometimes, yeah, with other schools, I'll email someone and an email comes back a week later. And I just think it's like pigeon, you know, letters or something. Yeah. It's just, it's ridiculous. But on the flip side, yeah, I do agree. I think that young people also need to be constantly stimulated. So I feel like there'll be moments where I'm a little bit embarrassed myself about how much stimulation I need. Like when I wash dishes, I'm like you with the cooking. I need music.
Definitely. But it's okay. I think honestly, no shame. It's a product of the kind of education and lifestyle that we've been brought up with. And it's only resulted us in being, I think, I'm very proud of the fact of how, like, just how fast we are. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. I like to think so too. And this takes us to the last segment of the interview, where I like to interview the guest about what is to come in the next few years, as well as next few decades. So and in your case, I guess maybe more than that, next half a century, what is coming up?
As you've spoken with Tokyo, my boyfriend, we sometimes have funny conversations about turning this alumni network into a business. So he's very entrepreneurial, not like me. He's got a lot of experience and confidence in there that I definitely don't have the same interest in. But he's a huge connector too. He's the one who kind of got me more into networking, and he's the one who really pushed me to make this network a real thing at a point when I was kind of too scared of how it'd be perceived and whether people would jump on with me. And so he's been great at getting a lot of his classmates into internships, and he's the go-to person when everyone is looking for an internship. He gets a bunch of texts around this point of year, people like, crap, I didn't get anything for summer. What do I do? And he finds them something right away. And he always says, I should charge commission on this every time he connects another person. And for now, he settles on that friend taking him out to lunch or something or for a drink. But he has dreams, kind of, might be a joke, of turning into a business, right? Of kind of like being the international school connector. Because everyone speaks English very well. Most people speak good Japanese. So you're really an asset in Japan, in a place that ranks super low on the English speaking indices. So I think being like the point person for knowing people in international schools is a really powerful thing to be and a really powerful role to play. You can connect people to all the big industries in Japan and all the big companies. And I think that if he were to start a business around that, then maybe I could do a little subsidiary in that as well, that is specifically tailored towards women. And I think there's such a push nowadays. Everyone says it's the best time to be a woman in finance or best time to be a woman in tech or anything. best time to be a woman, period, because everyone is looking to expand how many women they have in general hiring and in management especially. And so if there is a way that I could be someone that connects specifically women into roles and possibly advises companies on how to get women to stay longer at their companies, create more policies that are more friendly and conducive to having a work-life balance, that would be really cool. And I think whether that happens or not, and maybe I'll be laughing at this in 10, 15 years, I don't know, but I think that could be a really cool dream. And maybe that is in store for me, for us in the next decades to come.
Wow, that sounds really exciting. That's very, conducive to this podcast. That's kind of cool too. So, it was great talking to you today. I look forward to talking to you off air a bit about ISSH. I have some questions.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you.